Welcome, friends. This is Archangel. It's curious how people justify the tumult of life and how they write off various hardships. Inflation, price gouging, people who leave their shopping carts everywhere, gum on your shoe, mail disposability. This is just life, right? Them's is just the facts. Except that people will vehemently deny or at least make a token effort to justify the latter facet of our everyday world. When you point out the injustice of cost of living rising at a disproportionate rate to your paycheck, or new door dings when you come out of the store, on all of these inequities, everyone can agree. Yet when you point out that males are used and discarded as tissues, cannon fodder, and indentured bodyguards to the privileged half of our species, suddenly everybody has a justification to murky the waters of abject injustice. Indeed, everybody will skew male devaluing inequity with every improbable exception they can dream up. You see, when you corner bigots on their bias, when you call their misandristic bluff, you essentially call them out on their complacency as accomplices of hatred. It's not that people pretend purity. Everybody has some degree of bias in the secrecy of their own minds. Rather, people object to their dirty laundry being aired in front of others. I'm pretty sure Bugs Bunny has a bias against gun-toting farmers, but he does not want his prejudice to be outed in front of everyone at the company picnic. When I point out male devaluation and disposability, I essentially call out the prejudice of everyone into the open daylight, and this is not welcome. We are all warm and cozy with our biases, and we like to point our fingers at others and judge them as bigots and weak or stupid for allowing their bigotry to be discovered. When someone else's prejudice is called out, we act abhorred, like everybody else on politically correct lane. Yet at the same time, we feel relieved that our personal bigotries remain intact and unknown to everyone around us. Still, when you point out a person's bias to them, they do not take kindly to this unwelcomed intrusion onto their hypocrisy. And for some reason, when you point out a human's flaws, they get all defensive. Humans, such a colossal failure. Now, that reptilian project is showing a little promise. So, when you have a bigot's back against the ropes, that's when they strike back at you with their last weapon, their Hail Mary, shame. I am all too aware of shaming tactics. I am a warrior of male liberation, and so by necessity, I must point out people's disgusting and unchecked bigotry towards males. And, as one might imagine, I have been in the crosshairs of this shoot-from-the-hip final defense and coercion tactic. Subsequently, I have heard every shaming tactic there is, from nearly everybody, multiple times. Any male who dares put their head on the chopping block by elucidating male devaluation and disposability is intimately familiar with the ubiquitous, non-stop, ever-present, overwhelming shaming tactics. The more widespread the prejudice, the more ubiquitous the shaming tactics. And the more nerves you step on, the more frequent and vicious the shaming tactics become. Because misandry is such a travesty, because male disposability is such a commonplace prejudice, the shaming tactics are very deeply entrenched. I hear shaming tactics parroted by the brainwashed masses every day, the mindless sheeple regurgitating statements to keep others in check and behave as they stand in line for the slaughterhouse. Even so, I see an increasing in shaming tactic frequency in order to wrangle in the increasing numbers of awakening males breaking away from servitude and shame them back into accepting their bits and saddles. Seeing the ramping up of shaming tactics is a positive sign. It means that males are starting to wake from the gynocentric anesthesia they were ambushed with. And the more males begin to swallow red pills, the more wild cards and loose ends we have stirring discord among the citizenry of the vaginasty, and thus the more shaming tactics you will hear being hurled around to demean these emancipated shovels back into the shed. Shaming tactics are pathetic punches of a bigotry that seeks to live on through human hosts. On the other hand, shaming tactics are very effective on males in compelling conformity to willing disposability. Shaming tactics do, more often than not, succeed in pulling loose cannons back into conformity. So this is a very potent strategy of the vaginisty. Shaming tactics are more effective than not in compelling males to plug themselves back in to the matrix of male disposability, whether they believe the illusion or whether they have seen too much to ever be fooled by the charade again. This makes no difference because shaming tactics compel males to plug back in regardless of personal enlightenment. I, as all males, have heard these tactics all my life. Until we fully realized male disposability as reality, we never gave these tools of conformity any attention. They were just cutesy little societal euphemisms. Yet when I realized that they were not harmless sentiments, but rather act as a slave foreman whose job is to go up and down the line of slaves and whip honorary slaves back into digging, I then beheld the true import of shame-inducing conformity to a male-devaluing end. Since males want to be seen as strong, they will cave to shaming tactics, which play on inferences of weakness, cowardice, and selfishness. Moreover, since males desperately want to be loved and appreciated simply for existing, they cave to fairy tales promising such love and affection from females wrapped in a society appreciative of his worth. Yet the frequency and immense scope with which I hear shaming tactics issued means we are making headway. It is a positive development because it means we have the vaginisties back against the turnbuckle, calling them out on their misandry, and they have their gloves up in defense mode. Those intrepid individuals who call out injustice of male devaluation and male disposability are striking sensitive nerves by flinging society's laundry bag open onto the pavement for all to see. And the gynocentric hordes do not appreciate this. So people predictably resort to Plan B in order to silence the squeaky wheels who cause unrest. The squeaky wheels are thorns in the side of the vaginisty. And while there may be only a few thorns currently amongst a blizzard of male devaluation, even so, our numbers swell a few more each day. You may think males, liberating males, is some fringe element, but we are not going away because the problem which precipitated us has not vanished. Even so, one glorious day we will reach critical mass. And the vaginisty can sense this. They realize that males going their own way are different from men's rights. And whether it's MGTOW or some other name, there is something different about these disgruntled males. We cannot simply shame them back into line. These males are going to be tenaciously problematic to the continuance of the vaginisty's agenda of wholesale male disposability. People can sense that feminism is in its death throes, along with the simultaneous rise of these males who will not be swayed with a pat on the head or a blowjob. And this is starting to worry the gynocentric establishment, the vaginisty. As well it should. I am here to liberate males from gynocentrism, and I'll not be swayed. I have seen the wizard behind the curtain, and I cannot unwitness the universal gynocentrism, hypergamy, or male discardability that I have witnessed my entire life. Yes, I am a whistleblower, and as such, I am all too familiar with shaming tactics, for I have made myself a target of them by being a misandry defiant warrior. Yes, once upon a time, I did bow to shaming tactics, especially when they were used on me in front of others who pointed and jeered. And what do males exceedingly fear? Rejection. Because rejection kicks them out of fantasy and reacquaints them with the truth of male existence. Males are alone and unprotected, so we seek refuge in paradigms of farce, such as love and romance and community protection. Males run screaming from the reality that nobody truly loves us, and we are all alone, as we always have been. And when someone rejects us, it reminds males of their true state, their true plight. Thus, when someone uses a shaming tactic on a male complaining about disposability, That shaming tactic issued is a warning shot across the bow of the squeaky wheel. Shut up, get back in line, or you will be rejected. Oh yes, shaming tactics are wickedly effective on males. I hear them so often that they actually have the opposite effect on me. I become even more emboldened and resolute to defy gynocentrism. I used to hear shaming tactics and get livid because males were being used and abused and humiliated all the while into continuing to tear their heart out for female consumption. Now I hear shaming tactics and I simply smile with wicked glee because I know a secret the brainwashed masses don't. The vaginisty is going down. Maybe not tomorrow or next week. Indeed, mass liberation and male exodus from females may be years out. But the vaginisty is going down. And the increase in shaming tactics everywhere from the media to the corner quickie mart is the pathetic blind swinging of a floundering giant up against the ropes, like a shaky Hitler trying to replenish decimated regiments out of boys in the last days of war as defeat became imminent. The vaginisty is trying to form ranks out of the younger and younger to help combat the imminent fall of society as males walk away. Hence, every shaming tactic speaks to the fears that we have induced in the enemy. And my wicked smile in response to shaming tactics speaks to the reinforcement I receive from each successive insult, like receiving another garrison of troops, another shipment of munitions that I will apply towards vaginisty obliteration. Meanwhile, I work as a member of the resistance to free males from subjugation and enslavement. I used to have to dodge verbal bullets of being gay or heartbroken. Now I simply deflect the verbal shaming as if they were Nerf darts shot by unsteady hands. Yes, I realize that currently the awakened minority are woefully small compared to the brainwashed masses doing as instructed and parroting the gynocentric instructions throughout the land. What do shaming tactics look like? If you have a Y chromosome, then you know what they look like. For example, I might say, marriage is male abuse, and a shaming tactic response might be, what, are you gay? Are you a woman hater? Oh, you've been hurt. I run into a slew of shaming tactics when I promulgate male rejection of romance and love. What? You are rejecting females and the usury, entitlement, manipulation, privilege, and inherent apathy towards male suffering that comes with them? What's wrong with you? Shaming tactics accomplish conformity by painting males in a defective light. We make the very verbal and very public assumption that something is wrong with the troublemaker. Thus, since males want to be loved, and since nobody loves a defective toy, such inferences of defect spurn males back into conformity. So if you don't willingly go to your death for females, suddenly something is wrong with you. Now, what exactly your major malfunction is? That is the only variable. You don't bow to females and give your labor and life to them? So, you must be a coward, a communist. You're a jaded lover. You're a woman hater. You're a chauvinist. You have had a bad childhood. You don't like orange Kool-Aid. You suck at billiards. You missed the Black Friday sale at Macy's last year. You're a wuss. You can't change a flat tire. Yada, yada, yada. Your data file must be corrupted if you reject the usurpation of your life and productivity for the benefit of females. Oh, I know. You've been hurt in a previous relationship. You poor, weak fool who is too self-pitying to man up like everybody else and carry on searching for that right one. You silly little chump who is too soft, girly, and stuck in perpetual childhood with your video games and comic book conventions. That's right, fellas. If you do not bow at the beloved feet of the divine feminine and wash them with your tears, there is something wrong with you, not the system that demands male life in exchange for the privilege of worship. Oh yes, if you point out the inequities of female affirmative action, you're shamed as a woman hater, or as a coward who would not sacrifice for mom, or your wife, or dear old daughter. If you point out how we elevate female life, suddenly you're gay or you're juvenile, unwilling to grow up, trash the PlayStation, and accept your responsibilities. Whenever a male points out inequity against males, we shame him back into silence and conformity by inferring weakness or cowardice, or they are somehow defective. If a male dares step out of the Iron Maiden of gynocentrism, then something must be wrong with him. If males turn their backs on females and refuse to put that apple in their mouth so they may be rotated over a fire while a divorce court picks and chooses what choice cuts they want, then something is wrong with that male. What? Charlie thinks his life is worth that of any random female? Oh dear, something must be wrong with him. Joe thinks we should not abuse males? Something is definitely wrong with him. Stefan dares to reject females and the sex they peddle? Ooh, something is absolutely not right with him. Now, what exactly the problem is? Well, let's see. He's weak. He's a coward. He's soft. He's unmanly. He's evil. He's disgusting. He's misogynistic. He's immature. He's still in the closet. He's a leftist. He's a Marxist. He's a hippie. He's a drama maker. A boat rocker. He hates apple pie and Chevrolets. He was dropped on his head as a kid. He simply goes for the wrong types of females. He's a Broncos fan. He's ugly. He smells. He must be a premature ejaculator with only 3 inches at full salute. He likes Foghorn Leghorn over Daffy Duck, etc. However, what the extremely educated, massively intelligent, genius-level astute public does know is that if a male turns his back on abuse and disposability, something must be wrong with him. I mean, hello? All the other males are conforming, and they are not making a big stink when we load them into the cattle cars and ship them off to the showers. Using the failed romance or closeted sexual orientation as reasoning for males rejecting romantic relations with females is a tried and true shaming tactic, which necessarily includes all ingredients requisite for a quality frosting-coated shaming tactic: implied weakness, selfishness, and personal defect. Oh, you've been hurt, haven't you? The inference here, you sad little chump who has a mental defect because you chose the wrong one in the first place. Then you fell too deep and ignored the red flags in the second place. You're selfish and narcissistic for languishing in self-pity and licking your wounds in the third and fourth places. And then in the fifth place, you're too weak and cowardly to get back on your horse and try jumping into the meat grinder again by pledging your blood, sweat, tears, and servitude to a new taskmaster over and over and over, time and time again, ad infinitum. Oh yes, this one little shaming tactic speaks volumes and has devious, hidden intricacies meant to push male buttons and guilt them back into submission by calling into question their masculinity with inferences of cowardice, weakness, and selfishness. What? You want to take your shackles off? What's wrong with you? Oh, you've had a bad experience with a slave master, huh? Well, don't give up. You just need to find the right plantation. Oh, you fragile, silly little clown. You've been hurt, huh? I like how Tom Likas once responded on his radio show when he had the same accusation for nonconformity leveled at him. My dear, everybody with a penis has been hurt. That summed it up nicely, neatly, and succinctly. Our abuse of males is that ubiquitous. If you have a penis, if you have a Y chromosome, you are hurt and abused daily. Then you get to hear, you've been hurt's partner in crime, you just haven't found the right one yet. So we scold males for getting hurt, then we send them on an Easter egg hunt looking for a fictional unicorn. Lots of cunning and indoctrination are veiled within these everyday jabs at guys who are not currently in some stage of pamper, protect, and provide for women. You just need to find the right meat grinder, the right megalodon, the right vulture who won't pick at your spent carcass. Another equally good tactic leveled at males is to question their masculinity in public, which is a multi-layered shaming tactic meant to cast suspicion on their sexuality. Anytime you do not fall all over yourself with desire at every little thing a female does, you're gay. Competition for female attention is what society reaped from male disposability and hypermasculinity, and male-on-male abuse is what we get from male competition for female approval. When you call out a non-conforming male by insinuating them as unmanly or fruity, you strike a nerve with males who have a need for female approval and constantly desire to prove themselves and make their worth to females known in order to get that fake good boy pat on the head. Hence, calling nonconformists out as unmanly invokes a male's need to prove his worth so mommy will love him. Shaming tactics call into play many covert triggers unique to male desires and motivations, to which the unconscious masses simply respond as intended without reflection over the insignificance of these statements. Actions devoid of introspection is how animals operate. Yet males that flip a gear when someone questions their masculinity because they don't open doors for ladies or foam at the mouth anytime someone renders suspicion on them for being gay because they eschew females and the sex that they peddle. These hyper-masculine drones fail to ask themselves why they get mad at such accusations. This is a male running on survival instinct mode. Really, what does it matter if you're a straight male accused of being gay, or a gay male accused of being straight, or a mountain biker accused of being a cross-country skier? Who really cares if you're a McDonald's employee accused of Burger King sympathies? Maybe you're a hornswoggler accused of being a fart knocker. When a statement evokes a passionate response in you, you need to contemplate the reason for this. Otherwise, our sentience is all for naught, and we simply react as beasts with only our reptilian brains. Let people call you gay when you refuse to be disposable fodder for the maintenance and amusement of the fragile, tender little delicate flower petals we protect with our words, our laws, our wallets, our male lives. I cannot tell you how many times I have been accused of being gay over my lifetime simply because I have been at odds with female manipulation and usury. I have been gay more times by more people's assertions than I can even keep track of. Apparently, I am mistaken about my own orientation, and everybody else can clearly see that I'm gay because I don't willingly prostrate and serve the vaginisty. This used to bother me, and indeed invoked the desired effect, me wanting to prove my straightness to everyone through hypermasculinity and chest-thumping gynocentrism. Now, I could care not, because I know who I am. I do not need to prove my worth to anybody, and I see this gay tactic as blatant coercion by the feeble-minded on the feeble-minded. The lizard brain cannot understand why anyone would willingly reject females. Most brainwashed males are ignorantly unaware to the depths of devaluation and disposability to which they have pledged their lifeblood, their very life essence. And had they such knowledge, many are too weak to break their need for female approval, and so they try to shame you into joining them under the yoke of disposability with all the gay, juvenile, and failed love jabs they can conjure. Misery loves company, right? Females shame males as much as males do each other. Females see a male rejecting the altar of the divine feminine, and they want to know your major malfunction so that they may form a counterplan to remedy the situation and avoid such future malfunctioning of males. Females cannot understand a male's outright rejection of females or the sex they peddle. They cannot understand why the brainwashing hasn't taken with some males, and so they revert to shaming them in order to compel servitude. Shaming tactics are like hair gel to tame down the independent cowlicks and free-thinking flyaways, and hold all follicles to a static template of conformity. The shaming tactics of selfishness shame males into servitude as well. By insinuating selfishness, we shame males away from any self-interest or recreation and steer their amazing creativity and ingenuity and imagination into other disciplines like, maybe protecting and providing for females and carrying a gynocentric government that enforces female privilege. All the grow up, man up, soldier up, grow some balls, assume your responsibility, family, country, honor, duty. These all have the seeds of male behavior modification nicely ensconced within them. They all infer juvenility and selfishness. So they accuse the male of being selfish and the male who wants to prove his worth to females so he will be loved and saved by them. He will try his hardest to prove he is selfless, and this means he'll gladly become a disposable tool in order to deflect unflattering suspicion. Conservatism relies heavily on patriotism to indoctrinate and compel males to their duties, which is doublespeak for your utility. Males are flat-out told it is their responsibility to take care of others, to sacrifice for the higher good, and always shelter, provide, and protect the weak little woman folk with your life, even for the chicks you don't know. And males who show any type of self-interest or preservation are immediately targets of shaming carpet bombs. You're a narcissist, you're a coward, a rebel without a cause, a woman-hater, a chauvinist pig, a low-down weasel, an embarrassment, a failure, a spearmint gum lover, blah blah, frickin' etc. blah. Males are shamed out of their emotions and well-being, out of any healthy male identity, with such verbal patronizations of selfishness, which carry insinuation of weakness because you focus selfishly on your wants, whereas strong males are out protecting and providing for a gynocentric society this very second. The irony is that even though males are generally selfless, and we shame them with insinuation of selfishness to keep them selfless, females are actually the selfish half of humanity who are encouraged and enabled to expect male utility and sacrifice for their benefit. Males are naturally selfless, and we further their sacrifice for the higher good by throwing accusations of selfishness at them periodically, knowing it will trigger their need to prove their worth, because males are not born with any inherent worth. They must prove their worth to everybody, especially females. Females, on the other hand, are born with infinite value in the eyes of humankind. Males, they have to earn the space they take up. Males are the compassionate, altruistic sex by nature. Females are hypergamous. So, naturally, we need more altruism and forced labor from these compassionate giants, and so we shame them as selfish and hold their worth and a good boy pat on the head for ransom until they comply. When a female cries, society rushes to her side to hold her and comfort her. When a male cries, society simply turns off the lights and exits the room, leaving us all alone to weep in shame and darkness. Or we go a step further than simple shame with the males who want to indulge in emotion. Oh, you want to cry? I'll give you something to cry about, as society unbuckles its belt. How often have boys been shamed into not indulging emotion? Then for those that couldn't help the tears, we further damage them with a beating. How messed up is that? That we comfort, coddle, and pamper girls who are hurt or crying, yet the males who are hurt or crying, rather than comfort them or dry their tears, we give them a beating because they are hurting. This is tragedy. We abuse males with impunity, starting from the moment they pop out of the womb and we hack up their precious little anatomy. Being male is already a tragedy because we are the authors of dysfunction, vulgarity, and evil. We are all murderers, rapists, and plunderers, and we are hygienically challenged, bumbling morons. Then, besides all that, we are used up and thrown away at a female's earliest convenience. This is the true tragedy of being born with a Y chromosome. You're devalued and disposable, and you are constantly reminded of that. Moreover, when you show signs of self-care, you are shamed back into line to die when it's convenient for others. If males don't enact chivalry, if they don't spend their life's blood, sweat, and tears providing for others, if they don't give up their parachute or push old ladies out of the paths of speeding trains, if they don't automatically place female wants and needs above their own, if they do not dance as a court jester and mock themselves, their sex, and their anatomy for female entertainment, if they show any independent signs of thought, such as they have value equal to that of females simply because they exist, if they think any of these things, they are selfish, narcissistic, chauvinistic, egotistical, gay, misogynist, who have been hurt by a past relationship and will probably die alone. Males failing to follow the instructions given them to labor and die for female benefit, they are met with man up, grow up, soldier up, cowboy up, be a man, get a haircut and a real job. You need a woman. You need a girlfriend. You need a wife. You need to settle down and have a family. You need a retirement. You need a minivan. You need this. You should do that. Blah, blah, freaking blah. The only thing males need is liberation from all this garbage. Liberation from devaluation, liberation from subjugation and servitude to gynocentric taskmasters. The only thing males need is liberation from disposability. I am committed to this end, and there are others like me all around the globe, and our ranks swell, richer, a few more every day. The vaginasty can sense this swell. And they know it's different this time. It's not just a couple of purple pillars that will settle for nicer rules and false carrots of, we promise not to call you that name, and we'll be a little nicer. Now put your saddle back on, you loathsome workhorse, you. No, this is different, and it is a mortal threat to the vaginasty. Hence, the increase in shaming tactics I see and observe everywhere, and the shaming tactics are becoming more hostile. Everything from subtle reverse psychology innuendo to outright accusations of weakness, cowardice, selfishness, and narcissism, even juvenility. But then, these pathetic shaming tactics are the pathetic blind flailing of a stumbling giant whose fall is imminent. The other day, I was walking through a parking lot, and I heard a little boy of maybe 3 or 4 laughing with who I assumed was his father. I frowned because the boy was laughing so completely. I was not used to hearing the laughter of a boy so genuine and so free. It was spontaneous and unfiltered, the type of deep, guttural laughter that will give you sore abs the next day. It was simply the laughter of two beings sharing a moment. How sad does that represent our society, that I frown when I hear laughter emitted from a boy? We slander boys so much that you automatically think, what is wrong with him? Or, what kind of mischief is he up to whenever you hear a boy laughing, don't you? Such reactions are made possible by male devaluation courtesy of the vaginasty. Gynocentrism is such a bloodthirsty brutality upon males. I thought to myself how beautiful a sound it really was. I rarely hear boys laughing, let alone with such freedom, and I am used to seeing boys shamed or instructed on how they need to behave rather than be allowed to simply be, allowed to simply exude their natural, glorious, brilliant selves existing for their own end, not for any end of female servitude. Nope, we must mold and shape and break them into submission. Do this, don't do that, be a gentleman, take care of women, be the man of the house, dress like this, talk like that, be tough, don't cry, and on, we enact some of the most vicious, soul-crushing shaming tactics on the most emotionally tender of the human species, boys. In fact, everybody is used to seeing parents shame and abuse their sons everywhere, including in public. I have seen many a young boy hit, handled roughly, even beaten in grocery store aisles. Yet I cannot recall seeing a temper tantrum throwing little girl ever touched in such a fashion. They simply yell and scream until the parent placates them with a toy or candy in order to deflect the scrutiny their screaming brat is attracting because of her little 6-year-old entitlement. So I was thrown off by a little male laughing with an adult male so completely, rather than hearing the usual adult male correcting, chastising, and punishing the 3-year-old for not behaving like the mini shovels they are, and taking care of mommy and big sister, and for not having the lawn mowed, or the trash taken out, or the car fixed, or the addition built onto the house. You know, you're coming up on 3.5, Johnny. Have you thought about signing up for the Selective Service yet? How about your career path? We coddle and appease girls, yet we shame boys as we do their adult incarnations. We turn the lights off on them and close the door, leaving them to cry all alone. We absolutely fail boys in every possible way. We shame them, isolate them, then use and dispose of them when they reach legal age. In some areas, we use and dispose of them when they are still children, like boys forced into militias and given an AK-47 when they are 11. We purposefully isolate males, especially hurting males, so that they will have a more intense urge to seek approval and acceptance from others. Then we simply steer this need into females. This makes them malleable tools of convenience and disposability. The vaginisty is not stupid. They breed this zealous vehemence for gynocentrism into their white knights, manginas, and their male feminist attack drones, who swear their lives to females and will force gynocentrism upon their fellow males. And when the brainwashing doesn't take, when the colt starts to buck and whinny in his stall, we try to shame him back into conformity. Man up. Grow up. Are you gay? Are you a wimp? Oh, you're chauvinistic. Are you a woman hater? Are you selfish? Do you want to die alone? We have nothing but shame to hurl at males who exhibit self-respect. Shaming tactics surround males like air. Better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. Meaning, man up. Everybody gets burned. Pick up and soldier on. Yeah, better to have been a tool than a self-determining being. Love, marriage, kids, mortgage, bills, never being able to have nice things, emotional neglect and abuse, followed by one final screw in divorce court. Oh, these things are so worth it. You better find someone. You don't want to be that old man in the club, do ya? True love exists. You just have to find the right one. No, life isn't fair. Take it like a man. You don't want to be a selfish gay communist who still plays Xbox and dies alone, do ya? These statements and countless others will send males scrambling. But that's the beauty of liberation from gynocentrism. These statements simply make me laugh now. Impotent words. That is all they are. My friends, stand with me. Live free.